Welcome to this special edition series, A Strategic View of Hiring, a series of discussions to help you think through and implement smarter and more impactful strategies to recruit and develop world-class talent for your organization. And now, here is our series host, Mr. Rick Thiemann.
All right, and welcome back to the next module of A Strategic View of Hiring. I am Todd Schnick, joined by our series host, Rick Thiemann. Rick, as always, sir, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. This will be a fun one.
This is going to be an interesting one. I mean, today's module, we're going to deal with reading the resume and looking for the positives, looking for elements of a resume to be wary of, how to sort them, and other key points. And then finally, we're going to get into a deep dive discussion around several key strategies on how to effectively read resumes so that you can, you know, more successfully identify and evaluate talent that will hopefully better serve your organization. I mean, is this person behind that resume actually a good fit for the organization? So before we dive in, set the stage. I mean, I have to assume the reason we're doing this module is that there's far too many organizations that aren't effectively reading resumes, yeah?
Yeah, I see that over and over and over again, where as I start to pick through thoughts and things that I see within a resume, and people go, oh, I didn't see that, or didn't think about that, or that makes perfect sense. So I think to really set the stage, though, when you start to look at a resume, it reminds me of a cartoon I saw years ago, and I used it in my workshop. And that is, there's this guy sitting behind this screen, and there's a police officer standing next to him, and looks to be his wife or girlfriend on the other side, and tears coming down. And the caption reads, you know, my only concern is how I'm going to hide a 3 to 5 year gap on my resume. And so to really kind of expand on that, I was doing an open workshop, and one of the HR managers that was in the workshop raised her hand and said, you know, when I got to that talking point, and even though I use it in jest, he says, you know, that really happened to us. And I said, well, would you share it with the rest of the group? He says, yeah. He said, we had hired a sales manager, and we'd been going along for several months, and all of a sudden they didn't show up for work. And lo and behold, we find out 3 or 4 weeks later that he had lost his appeal and was back in jail. Mm-hmm. So, it really begs the question of, what does a resume tell us and what doesn't it tell us?
Well, if you read between the lines there and what you just said in that story, you should have known that from the resume. I mean, you should be able to discern those kinds of life histories from this resume. And how would you actually define what a resume is, Rick?
Well, I once read or heard that a resume is nothing more than an unaudited balance sheet without the liabilities.
Sort of like most people's social media profiles. You're just presenting what you want the world to see.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. You know, but no one ever embellishes on their resume, right? No.
I mean, seriously, how real is that? I mean, how many resumes do you see are embellished in some way, shape, or form?
Well, actually, it's the number's higher than what you'd suspect. I mean, it statistics, not mine per se, but statistics that you read through various journals and things, talk roughly that 25% of most resumes contain some type of inaccuracy or perhaps even embellishments.
Wow.
Because a resume is designed for one thing. That's to look good, right?
Yeah.
And resume is designed to, resume and a cover letter are designed to present myself in such a way that I look good enough that they say, yeah, I want to interview them.
Well, so if you have this stack of resumes on your desk, I mean, a quarter of them have something inaccurate about them, and you may ultimately hire the wrong person who's the wrong fit for your organization. I mean, this is critical to understand this and how to find these inaccuracies, right?
Yeah. To me, reading a resume is more like an art form. But when it comes to reading a resume, I have to admit that I'm probably the world's biggest skeptic and probably even the world's biggest critic, or perhaps at times I consider myself even a cynic, because I see so many of these that just, I look at the resume and I go, that just doesn't add up, or I'm not real sure I believe all that's in there. So as we start to look at the resume, you know, process per se, I really kind of put on my detective hat to say, okay, what's this resume telling me? But more importantly, what's the resume not telling me, mm-hmm. based on what they've not disclosed?
Mm-hmm. And the strategies we're going to get into later are going to help you better understand what it's not telling, which is, as we learned from your story just a few minutes ago, is really, really critical. And I've heard you say, Rick, that you don't read resumes, you scrutinize them. I mean, you really have to get into these things and take them very seriously, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. So when you start really delving into the one of the biggest things, and we'll get into all the different points and things I look at, but it really is making sure that I am not taking things for granted, I'm not accepting things at face value, and that I'm really looking for things that substantiate and that I can get my arms around talking points when I actually decide that I'm going to interview them.
You know, looking back to my hiring days when I was going through resumes, I never found one that said someone got fired.
No, so, I don't think you'll ever see have anybody say that. But yeah, I was let go of that because I didn't show up for work for 3 days. So,
any other big red caution flags we ought to be thinking about off the top here?
Well, more and more we see resumes being submitted through a search firm or some type of agency or what have you, employment agency, whatever. And oftentimes their placement fee depends upon getting that candidate placed. Oh. And so they're going to do their jolly best to write the resume to help them pull out the talking points to make them look good because they're trying to present what they feel is a viable candidate. Whether or not they really vetted them out, that's a whole nother topic. But keep in mind, though, that their whole mission is to get that candidate placed and to collect a placement fee out of that. So it's not uncommon for them to help write or rewrite the resume. And so I look for how much fluff is possibly in there. Right.
Boy, Rick, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, how many times did I get snookered by that? Because I always thought a resume submitted by a headhunter, for instance, was done professionally. I should trust it. It looks like I might have been wrong on that assumption.
No, even if it is done professionally, I'd want to be concerned because how much are they really, again, back to that word embellishment, not lying, but to kind of stretch the truth of what I really did or how much of what they put in a resume that they describe as things that they accomplished were actually directly related to them coming up with the idea, coming up with the process, coming up with the structure, coming up with the procedures, delivering the result, and actually coming and following through with an end outcome.
Well, a headhunter may not necessarily be worried about whether this person they're placing is a good cultural fit to the organization.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other thing. You can't pick out cultural fit from the resume. Well, maybe that's not as fair. If somebody's worked for a number of small companies along the way, and you are a big company, they might have trouble transitioning into working for that larger company or vice versa. Mm-hmm. So those could be some things that, I guess if you really split hairs, you could start to pick out in a resume. But
all right. So before we dive into our extensive conversation around these reading strategies, these resume reading strategies, any other key points we ought to be thinking about that come to mind, Rick?
Well, I think as I enter in, if I'm going to be involved with a client and help them kind of go through and sort candidates, there's several things that come to mind besides the fact of whether or not they've been vetted or presented by a search firm or a headhunter or some type. But I think there's a number of things that I always keep in mind, and that is that some people may not be the best at presenting themselves on paper. So It may not be a great resume. That doesn't mean they're not a great employee. Meaning, if you think about a younger person who's maybe worked in the trades, worked with their hands, they're applying for a job as a heavy equipment operator or maybe an entry-level machinist, and they don't have a lot of experience. Well, how sophisticated do you expect that resume to really look? So it's more to me about what's the job, and the higher level of education, the more sophisticated I expect that resume to be. And so therefore, when I look at the resume as a whole, it's how well is it constructed? What's the relevancy of the person who's applying for the job? Does the appearance of the resume hold water for me? Are there any grammatical errors? And those are the things that I think are just fundamental things that I have in the back of my mind.
I've always been so quick to dismiss a resume because of a grammar error. And perhaps I shouldn't be so. But the key point there is it depends on the role we're trying to fill here.
Absolutely. If I'm looking for my office administrator, then I might have a lot more discerning component pieces around a resume that's not grammatically correct or run on sentences or not formatted properly. But if it's a laborer or someone of that nature or someone who's going to work in shipping, receiving, even though I mentioned earlier that I'm probably the world's biggest skeptic and I really put my detective hat on when I'm looking at one, I still give a lot of latitude to the individual and the dynamics, and I'm not just going to throw a resume out because it doesn't look good, right? I really want to kind of know what's behind it and before I start making judgment calls, right? Otherwise, I'm passing judgment on what's there rather than, again, back to the word scrutinizing the resume and the situation all behind that. So that's, I guess, how I would size that up.
Yeah, understood. So another thing that I've heard you talk about, and I look back on my career and realize how many times I did this, is I was reviewing and going through and sorting resumes. I would make notes on these things, and I would circle things, and I would make notes to myself. I think I understand that that's not really the best idea, right?
It was a horrible idea because the resume or application becomes a legal document if you get hauled into court for any type of court case or discrimination case or what have you. And I don't know how much truth this is. It's something I'd heard a long time ago, but I guess somebody had written hot on the application with a female resume, right? Versus meaning it was a hot applicant versus the implied of that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, the number one rule is never write on the application, never write on a resume, use a separate sheet of paper. That way it can be lost or whatever. So use a separate sheet of paper to make notes. And then as you start to go through that resume process, it can get pretty daunting. Mm-hmm. And if you're just going to kind of flippantly go through them to look to see which ones you think have the best possibility, then, you know, you're not really studying the resume and you're not really vetting out whether or not there's enough depth of experience, because there may be some relevancy to the role, even though it's not an exact fit, there might be some relevancy that's aligned with that. So when I go through the resume process, I like to limit no more than 6 to 8, 10 max, but 6 to 8 resumes at a time, where I'm really going to scrutinize the resume and read through that resume for all the things that I'm really after, that I want to dig out. Because as I move to decide what I want to do with this applicant at the next round, which means moving them to some type of phone screen, I want to make sure I've got all my ducks in a row and this is a person I want to spend enough time with doing that phone screen. That's going to make perfect sense.
Going back to how you said, I scrutinize a resume. I don't read it. Well, if you do more than 6 to 8, you're going to lose focus, right? Then you're just trying to churn through them just so you check off the box. I read through 25 resumes.
Well, especially for a guy like me who's somewhat doesn't always do a good job of staying focused. I mean, my mind can tend to wander, right? So I want to make sure that I spend and give that resume plenty of due diligence, if you will, before I decide to put it in a different pile. So, and then what I do from there is I've got my pen on my highlighter, so I might highlight certain things that stand out for me. I don't write on a resume. I use the highlighter to highlight those things. I use the pen on my notes pad to kind of create a separate sheet of paper. And then that resume gets shifted into either I write D on it for definitely, or I write an M for maybe, and I write an N for no, and I put it up in the upper-hand corner. And that way I know that I've already vetted that resume to whether it's a definite yes, or it's an M for maybe, or no, and it goes into different stacks. Now,
when you say definitely, you're talking about moving to the next stage in the hiring process, not hiring them.
That's correct. Okay. They're definitely a yes that I want to move that candidate to the next level. Now, for me, there's a lot of resume services, and again, based on the size of organization and the tracking, the applicant tracking system that they use, a lot of this stuff is typically on a computer. But for me, I like to print my resumes out because I want a hard copy. I want to be able to really scrutinize it well. I want my note tablet next to me. So for me, I'm kind of old school, and that's my preference.
Mm-hmm. For someone listening who says, all right, well, Rick, well, how do I discern the difference between a definite and a maybe? Is there a simple piece of advice you can share to say, here's the difference between what goes in which pile?
Well, it really gets down to where we're going to go next, and that is, and this might sound really quite outlandish, but there are 17 different things that are going through my mind when I'm looking at a resume.
Okay. All right. So I get where you're going with that. 17. Well, I can assure you when I was doing this, I wasn't thinking about 17 different things. But another key point I want to ask you about before we get into the reading strategies is you just don't dismiss the maybes. There's a reason you labeled them a maybe. I mean, sometimes there's some hidden gems there, right?
Absolutely. And the greatest thing is one of the gals that worked for me for actually 10 years and her husband got transferred. So we lost the lady, but what an amazing find she was. But she wasn't in the first batch because there were some things that in her resume the first time through that, you know, I felt there were some others that had more qualifications, but there's some things that kind of stuck out to me that said, maybe. And so I kind of the rule of thumb I have is that for every 25 resumes I get, I might find 6 to 8 that really look halfway decent. Mm-hmm. And I only might find 3 to 5 that I'm actually going to interview. Mm-hmm. Or do the phone screen. Mm-hmm. Well, what if I only find 3 to 5 to do the phone screen and those don't pan out? Well, then am I going to start my search over? Am I going to put the ad back in? Or am I going to go to my maybe file? And maybe there's something I missed, right? And I wasn't quite hip about that particular one, but the lady that, her name was Jody, and she was just an amazing employee for 10 years and would probably still be with me today if her hadn't gotten transferred. But she was in the second stack. I mean, she didn't come out of the first stack.
All right. Well, let's get to the good stuff here. As you said, you have 17 resume reading strategies that you follow when you're reviewing these resumes. So let's dive into that. We'll start off by, I guess, an obvious question. Is the applicant currently employed? How long have they been currently employed? Any patterns to look at there?
Yeah, so I think in terms of helping people work through the things that I'm looking at and thinking through in a resume, I don't know that we'll spend time listing each of 17 item by item.
Right.
I think we'll just kind of flow some of them together because they will obviously bleed off one another.
Sure.
But certainly I'll clearly try to define what's going on in my head as I'm looking at that. So, you know, the first thing is the applicant currently employed and how long has it been since they've been out of work? And so why is that important? Well, in today's day and age versus several years ago, it might take anywhere from 4 to 6 months for someone to land a job. And the higher we go in the kind of the roles and responsibilities from managing to director to VP and what have you, sometimes it takes longer, you know, the larger the role and the more sophisticated the role, sometimes the longer it takes to land work. So I'm always skeptical if based on, you know, the size. So let's say a salesperson per se has been out of work for 6 months. Well, you know, salespeople are needed everywhere. So the what I'm looking for is a pattern. And so I looked at one this morning for the client. And the odd part was that this individual shows that their first job was from 2004 to 2006. And then their next job was from 2006 to 2011. And then they got a little bit more succinct and they show that they started in October 2011 and worked till March of 2013. So there was a year and a half. So then there was looks like maybe a 30-day gap. And then they started from 2013 to 2014, so they're a year. Well, then they're out for 6 months before they land their next job, and they land, say they're a year and a half. And then their next job shows that they were out for 6 months again before between that and their next job. And then the next job shows they work for 6 months, and now they're out of a job again. Well, there's too much hopping going mm-hmm. on for me, right? Mm-hmm. And so while much of the sales success looks pretty impressive, when you really peel it back and start really digging into what's there, there's too much job hopping for me that's going on in there. And I'll be the first to be more lenient on a salesperson because, I mean, that's been my world for 40 years as a sales guy. So I know that that doesn't always pan out in the kind of jobs that you hold and the kind of companies you might go to work for. But nonetheless, does the resume suggest a job hopper? So if they're out of work, that's not so much for me. But how long have they been out of work? If they've been out of work for a year, year and a half, so what's going on there, right?
And so that could be a very logical reason. I mean, they took leave to raise a child, to
absolutely
deal with a health crisis or help the family issue. I mean, there's very logical reasons. They shouldn't be hiding that.
Right. But given that, then I want to make sure that the relevant work history of what they've done and what I want them to do needs to be really, really in line because I don't want somebody who's not all that experienced with that kind of track record. I'm going to be a little bit more lenient, but I want to make sure that they really understand that the role that they're applying for has a really strong fit. And then I'm a little bit more lenient if there's some job hopping going on.
All right. So I guess the next point we ought to be understanding here is being mindful of any gaps in employment history. Why does that matter?
Gaps as a general rule is not that big of a deal, but a lot of gaps over consistent time. So in the resume I've been kind of referring to as we've talked today, is that this individual's held 4 different jobs in the last 6 years. And each of them comes with about a year, year and a half of employment with about 6 months of a gap in between. Well, that's not very consistent when it looks at, you know, tenure and whether or not that person can hold a job.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, certainly certain strange things happen where he gets in the wrong company and they got a business or they're bought and he's got it, you know, it gets transitioned. But so there's a lot of reasons why there may be behind that. But the more inconsistency in the resume, the greater concerns I have. So that means then that I've got to make sure that the credentials that person has really fit well so that the learning curve then is lessened. And so the more learning curve I see that comes into play with that individual, the harder it is for me to transition them into my kind of work. So I don't mind the job hopping, but it's got to be consistent with the kind of work that they've done.
All right. So the next point to think about here, the next strategy is understanding the career goal of the applicant. Is their career goal in line with the offered position? Why does that matter?
Well, we kind of talked a little earlier about the possibility of looking at culture. And so when we look at the position being offered, we're looking at one individual who looked to be just a stellar candidate to fill in line with the right kind of career goals. But the dynamic was what we knew about the company was kind of an old line, family-owned, Southern-based company. And so people tended to be there a long time before they got promoted. And this young individual, you could tell by his resume that every 2 years he'd pretty much been promoted to the next level and continued to get progressive. And so this young lad's career goals were in line, but the cultural fit around being able to move someone every 2 years with his career goal, as ambitious as he was, we weren't sure that we could match that from the organizational standpoint. So those are the things you start to kind of read between the lines with as you're looking at resume and the individual and where they've been and what they've done and how those things align with the position you're being offered.
Got it. So the next point you talk about is establishing the appropriate education. That seems like a no-brainer. What are you really getting at there?
A lot of companies believe that they don't want to hire anybody unless they've got a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen many, many educated people with high-level degrees that I wouldn't give you a plug nickel for. And I've seen many people who don't have degrees, you know, outwork them because they're just harder workers. So I think education has relevancy to what's there. So if I'm looking for a controller, I might want a degree in finance,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, so the appropriate education I think is important. But sometimes I think education may have so much emphasis that it distorts what the individual can do or has done. And so I'm a little bit more lenient on the educational factor there than I think most people might be comfortable with.
Well, remember, the key strategy here isn't establishing education. It's establishing appropriate education, or even background and training and experience, right, can play into that too.
Yeah. So when you look at then, you know, relevant job history, someone that's been in a role or similar role for 10 to 12 years is probably going to have more real world experience just from the length of tenure in the job than what a lot of education is going to provide. And just because someone's got an education doesn't mean they can apply what they've learned. Some people are really book smart, but they're not very street smart.
Mm-hmm.
So I take education in its appropriate fashion, but I sometimes take it with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is some people who are highly educated believe that they're highly educated, so they only want to hire highly educated people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big argument that you could get into, but I think there's some relevancy about just understanding what's appropriate and what's not.
The whole point of this whole exercise, this whole module is being able to appropriately evaluate talent that's a good fit for the organization, that it can do the job and yield results. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, because you can always send them back to finish, you know, if there's a certain educational piece and that's the hang up, but everything else looks good, you can always send them back to school to finish a degree or finish an education or further an education or get them the education and things that they may be lacking. So those, to me, sometimes people limit the hiring of that individual based on appropriate educational levels.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we talked about establishing whether they have an appropriate educational background, but now we want to talk about, are they within the appropriate hiring cycle? What do you mean by that?
Well, oftentimes you'll find, and this happened with a client the other day, they were looking at a gentleman that had was seasoned, and the role was more entry level than seasoned. An individual was willing to step back from having been in a director role to go back into a territory account manager role. And that's a huge difference in pay. It's a huge difference in responsibility. This individual's previous roles and responsibilities were all high level. And this particular opportunity, this individual was professing that they really wanted the role, that they were looking to kind of scale back. And there are certainly situations that happen where as people get older, they decide they don't want anything to do with management anymore. They just want to be able to contribute and work and not have to have the headaches of all the paperwork and leadership that goes along with managing a team, and just looks for a role to kind of fit in. But typically speaking, I don't see those happen to a great success. So I'm always concerned about someone who is willing to look at a lesser role or is applying for a lesser role than what we're stating, and based on what their job history does. Those things just don't tend to add up for me.
Rick, I've heard you talk about that you have to read the resume from back to front. That's the next strategy. Why?
Okay. So when I look at a resume, I kind of glance at the front just to see what they're doing now, to see what that fit is. But what I really do is I read the resume from back to front, not front to back, because I want to start with where they started. And I want to look at the sequence of events, the chronological roles and responsibilities they've had, the progressiveness that they've had. Have they been promoted 3 times? From where they were entered in at,
mm-hmm.
right? And then, so as they move up the ladder, have they gained more experience, or have they just moved from one position in one company to the same position in another company to the same position in another company? There's no progressiveness to that. They're all lateral moves. There's no continuation of skills and abilities in terms of their growth.
Because that's the next strategy, right? Is understanding, you know, does that resume show progressive roles and responsibilities?
Yeah, right. So if I'm seeing that individual has continually been promoted everywhere they've been, and the resume is always speaking to things that they've accomplished, not just duties, then the odds of them coming on board to fill a role for you and be successful are much greater than not.
Because what this results in, if I'm understanding this progression here, is it demonstrates stability in their career direction, which I think yields signs of sound decision-making and good judgment, right? Well, which is what you want.
Right. So as we look at then the sequence of events, I'll go back to the resume from earlier today. This person looks like they've really bounced around a lot. And maybe some of those things have not been their fault, but there's too many things in terms of the movement of that that suggest, well, did he get bored there quickly or frustrated too soon and just decide to jump? And so is there any impulsiveness that was behind this? Is there any inconsistency in this individual's makeup of being able to have some type of stable decision-making process? Are they always making snap decisions and then making foolish decisions or foolish judgments? Those are the things that I'm trying to see if a resume can help me kind of pick out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've heard you say you need breadth and depth of experience. That's critical. Why?
Okay. So when we talk about breadth and depth, right? So breadth of experience means that I might have held a position as a plant manager. And also in that same company, I started in sales and I moved into sales management and then decided I wanted some broader experience and move into operations. And now I pick up my background in sales, marketing, and operations, right? So now I'm getting some breadth of experience. Depth of experience is different in that it's the progression within that role. So I became an inside sales rep and I moved to an outside sales rep. Then I became an account rep and then I became a business development manager and then I became sales manager. So there's depth in that, right? In terms of where I've been and what I've done in that space. And then as I've moved through the organization, now I branched out because maybe my long-term career goal is to be a general manager. And so rather than to just only have knowledge in around finance and accounting and become a general manager, well, guess how I'm going to tend to manage? I'm going to manage by the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Or if I've only really been exposed on the sales and marketing side and I become a general manager, then guess how I'm going to tend to manage? I'm going to be more sales-minded and less operational-minded. So we find that to have a well-balanced in roles of leadership as moving forward, having people that have more of a broader spectrum, but also some depth of experience to give them the business knowledge that they need to be successful.
So I guess when you look at a resume, I mean, I guess you have to understand, is there a greater emphasis on their education rather than their experience? I guess that's relevant, right?
Yeah, this is probably more true for young kids coming out of school who are trying to get a job and who don't really have the relevant experience, so they really get into all their education and things like that. But what I look for along that line is that, you know, did they do an internship? Was that part of their what their education piece was? What's the learning progression? Is the job they're holding now in line with what they went to school for? Those kinds of things that look at education experience that tie together help me look at, again, maybe the person made the wrong decision in terms of what they wanted to do in college. Maybe they wanted to do something in finance because their dad was an accountant, right? And all of a sudden they realize that's not working for them. And so they're going to go back to school, right? Mm-hmm. So education, emphasis, experience, all those things kind of tie together as I look at that particular aspect of an individual's contribution, if you will.
Well, in a similar vein, I mean, I one of the things you have to observe is more space given to previous jobs than their current job. I mean, my guess would be if they're not giving any space to the current job, there's something to hide.
Well, so here's what I've seen a lot in resumes is that the job they're in now, they've been there for, let's say, 4 years, and they list 3 bullet points. But the job previous to that, they were in for 2 years, and they list 15 bullet points, right? So you'd think that the 4 years they've been in currently, they'd have a lot more to speak to and a lot more accomplishments to speak to. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen that on resumes where it just doesn't add up by saying, you'd think there's a lot more to what they would have accomplished in the length of time they've been, but I look back at other things and they've given more credence to lesser jobs of things they've accomplished more. So that's something I'm going to kind of make a mental note of as I'm looking through that resume, as I start getting more into the interviewing thought process of, so things that just make sense and don't make sense.
Well, thinking about accomplishments is a big part of the next strategy. And you know, does the resume, I mean, resume can really be in two main buckets, right? Is the resume focused on accomplishments and achievements? Does it demonstrate that they're profit-minded and that they yield results? Or is the resume just a listing of their duties and responsibilities? Those are very different resumes.
Well, yeah, more often than not, you find people who really just list, it's what I call a duties list resume, not an accomplishments list. And so in the interview process, I go after truly interviewing for performance. I tie that in with behavior-based interviewing, but I really tie in the performance element of it. So I'm looking for things in the resume that really define things that they've accomplished and actually achieved, not just managed and overseen. Because I'm not looking for a homeroom teacher, so to speak, in a management role, right? I want somebody who knows how to get things done through others. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for those kinds of accomplishments of setting direction and setting goals and setting budgets and managing P&L. Those kinds of things are important to understand that they're results-oriented, mm-hmm. I guess is the best way to put that.
Yep. Boy, this next strategy is one that I know that I have fallen short on over the years. And this is the idea of understanding, yes, an applicant has experience. Yes, they have training, but has that experience and has that training been acquired in a comparable setting? That's a really different way to think about experience and training.
Yeah. In other words, is it transferable? Okay. So let's just say I'm looking for a route salesman. Okay. And I want them to sell any type of commodity. Okay. And the individual was a former Snap-on Tools, or they were a former Schwann truck driver, right? So I'm looking for things that have comparable kinds of job relevancy. What I'm not looking for is if I want to hire a technician and my technician is going to be out in the field and constantly making calls for service, right? And the technician I hire has worked in a plant for the last 10 years. And so what makes me think that person who's come into a regimented schedule, punched a clock, worked 8 to 5, maybe some overtime here and there, and goes home, right, is going to then move, even though they're a technician, they're going to move to being in a truck and scheduling their own time and turning in paperwork and getting directions on where to go next in their next sequence. So all those kinds of things have relevancy to what it is I'm looking to accomplish, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I talk about, has their experience or training been in a comparable situation? So is it transferable? What's the learning curve? What's their personality? What's the fit? All those things come into play when I look at the resume.
All right. Well, closing here in our resume reading strategies, oftentimes an applicant that submitted a resume for a particular opportunity, this is not the right fit. Doesn't mean you should just summarily dismiss them. They might fit in another role in the organization, right? Finding talent's difficult these days. You ought to not overlook those kinds of opportunities.
Yeah, I think any good hiring process has a pool of applicants that fit within a given role or given area. And is the skill transferable? Is the individual open to it? Is it going to be a lateral move, a forward move, a backward move? Those kinds of things come into play. So I'm always hanging on to that resume saying, well, if not here, then where?
All right, Rick. Well, there are 17 really, really impactful resume reading strategies. Before we close up this module, any final thoughts you want to share?
Well, you know, there's so many things to consider in deciphering a resume. And I think that one of the things that gets missed so often is that an applicant can literally hide a 2-year gap on his resume.
Yeah.
And what do I mean by that? So let's just say on the resume, we see that the employment dates are from 2015 to 2017. Well, we don't know if he started in January of 2015 and worked all the way through December of 2017. Mm-hmm. Well, that's 3 full years, right?
All right.
But what if that individual didn't start till December of 2015 on the 31st and only worked till January of 2017? Well, that's a year,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So where'd the rest of that time go? So, and most resumes don't succinctly point out month, year to date. So it's critical to understand that a resume, it's not what it tells you, it's what it doesn't tell you.
Yep.
And you kind of have to put that detective hat on to really say, okay, can I trust what's here? The general rule of thumb is no, right? That the only way to really find that out is to vet that out is when you move into doing the phone screen and then further into the interview piece and then into the checking references piece. Can you validate that what's actually been stated in a resume is actually true?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that as we get into strategies around interviewing and strategies around checking references and further vet that out. But reading the resume is a critical part in terms of helping you prepare for the phone screen. And so that then transition of vetting people out sooner rather than later and not getting down the pike and realize you left something out mm-hmm. by just not questioning things enough.
Mm-hmm. Understood. All right. That's all the time we have for today. On behalf of our series host, Rick Thiemann, I am Todd Schnick. Stay tuned for the next module of A Strategic View of Hiring. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the special edition series, A Strategic View of Hiring. This series is made possible by The Executive Group, Linking human capital with strategic intent, building organizational talent, and developing both world-class leaders and sales force effectiveness. To learn more, visit the Executive Group online at theeg.com. That's theeg.com.